everyone. Welcome to Playwright, a podcast about creating and sharing new ways to play. My name is Ryan Heyman. You can call me H.
And I am Ryan Quintel. You can call me Q.
Now, Q, I know that you're a big Apple person. This last week, as of recording, I guess as of the time of release, it's going to be old news, was the launch of the Apple Arcade. Have you been playing around with any of those games that have come to that new subscription service from Apple?
I haven't. I've been kind of waiting for iPad OS to also be updated. So the iPhone got updated, Apple Arcade came out, and you kind of get a free 1 month trial with the whole thing. I don't know if I see myself playing a lot of games on my phone. I have not historically, but I could definitely see myself picking up an Xbox controller, pairing it with my iPad, and kind of using it as like a mini sort of mobile station while, you know, Jess is streaming Netflix or something.
You know, as somebody who's done marketing for game subscription services before, I find Apple's approach to be a little puzzling. In that they do a good job of showing off the content and showing off, like, really letting the game speak for themselves and letting the price point speak. But overall, the messaging is just a little confusing. It's like, so you can play these games on iPhone, iPad, your Mac, or your Apple TV.
Yep.
But they don't really say, and I've looked around, like, how that's going to work, because like these are not all taking the same input methods, you know, like you can't just take a touchscreen game and then put it on a Mac and call it good.
Right. So, and I think this adds to the layer of confusion. They don't actually necessarily mean all at the same time. And so what I mean by that is, so the iPhone just got iOS 13, Apple Arcade is on your iPhone. iPad OS, which is essentially the iPad's critical update, isn't coming until either next week or the week after. So then you will be able to have it on iPhone, iPad. And then finally, the last layer is towards the end of September or into October, Mac OS will get its update. And then in the App Store of that, you will see those games appear. But yeah, then what are the inputs going to be? What are the controls going to be? You have to imagine that there's some agreement that everything has to work either with mouse and keyboard or a controller, as well as a touch interface, because Macs, you know, do not have any touch interface other than the trackpad.
Which seems to kind of like undercut the whole reason for like designing for kind of a niche platform like a completely touchscreen phone. You know, it's like,
yeah,
how do you design something cool for a certain platform if it has to be compatible with just about any way that you could possibly interact with it? But I don't
That's
know.
A good
it's
question.
Very confusing. And those answers just don't seem to exist anywhere.
Yeah. So I know I just was recently listening to the Giant Bombcast, and they talked about how, because now you can pair a game controller with iOS and iOS 13, technically all the games in some way have some controller support, so maybe they're just expecting that to map directly to the Mac, but it's not clear, is it? It's not clear.
Well, anyways, let's get to our own video games today and stop ruminating on what the competitor are doing.
I will before we do that, I will say one last thing on it. I am excited to try it because I might enjoy a mobile game if I'm not constantly dealing with timers and virtual currency and the whole thing. So fingers crossed that it is good.
Yeah. You know, I miss the days of mobile games asking you just to pay like, hey, pay $3. You get a version without the ads and maybe a couple of extra features. Like that was nice. You know, it's like, okay, I've got the free download. I decided to upgrade. I feel good about it. Now it's like pay $10 and you won't see ads this year. It's like, well,
yeah,
it's just not the same. I don't see myself playing this for more than a couple months, but still, yeah, it's just not the same. I don't like it.
Agreed. All right. I'm sorry to stall. You owe me a pitch first this week, right?
I do indeed. There was a game that I saw in the kind of new to Steam registry. You know, that's always an interesting place to look for inspiration. It's going to be like maybe 1 out of 10 is anything of worth these days. But there was a game that came around called Crowd Control. Kind of, it fills the screen with little cartoon people four players compete to do basically like a wave at a baseball game. They call it a Mexican wave, which is weird because I've just never heard it referred to that before. And so to me, it just comes off as a little like, I don't know,
vaguely racist potentially. Like that.
But I'm sure it's a legitimate term that predates, I don't know. It's just like to somebody who's never heard that before, even have a little section of their game description dedicated to explaining what a Mexican wave is. But anyways, regardless, let's not dwell on that detail. That is not important to what we're talking about today. But basically, it's kind of like creating a wave like you would see at a baseball game in the crowds, and not having your wave broken. So I was thinking about if there was a competitive game, maybe again, kind of a four-player thing with a big kind of a big crowd in an area, and each of the four players represents like an emotion or a headspace that a crowd can be in, and you kind of compete to spread your designated emotion throughout the crowd, and whether that is rioting or whether it's laughter or I'm not sure, but I would just love some sort of a social focus with maybe some, you know, details of like you have to think about how things spread and getting bottlenecked in areas where the environment kind of like causes there to be fewer people, and just kind of very thoughtfully placing your little seeds of inspiration to overtake a crowd in one direction or another. So, I don't know what this looks like, but let's start the clock and see where it takes us.
One of my favorite things in large-scale sporting events or giant public spectacle is seeing a crowd that is also finally, what's the word I'm looking for, choreographed to turn cards and change colors and that sort of thing, and to create messages like that. So maybe spreading of one of these emotions can kind of like change colors of sections of the crowd.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it would be really easy to track like color of shirt as a way of telling. And so people can kind of change color over time based on what they're feeling and experiencing. And, I'm wondering if there are, kind of like in, I want to give examples, but like maybe like burnout in the crash mode, how you could kind of, you can hit a car into something explosive and then you kind of know that like that's going to take care of itself and set off other chain reactions in and of itself. And so, you know, you're looking for kind of powder keg areas in this crowd, whether it's, for whatever your desired emotion is.
I like kind of the idea of maybe there being the backdrop of a sports game or something happening and trying to use emotions to throttle fans, right? Like your goal is still to get the team to win the game, but in the most indirect way possible, right? You're always talking about like, we're the additional man on the field. And doing so like could also mean when the team is having a tough time or isn't doing well, then you get into a scenario where people start to turn, people's things start to go a little bit bad, get ugly, and you want to spread love into that section, whether it's with humor or something. But you see like, oh, my humor people are way over, like three sections over. So I've got to get like these funny people to spread the funny such that it it can overtake the sort of discontent and anger going on.
Kind of have like hero characters like in Warcraft 3 or something like that that can change the tide of the war. There was a stage towards the end of Jammer Lammy, actually, oddly enough, that takes place in a giant concert venue. In the Japanese version, it takes place in hell. In the American version, it takes place on an island due to, you know, just American sensitivities, I guess. It's really neat because the crowd is kind of this kind of like zombie-eyed crowd. You get the sense that it's kind of like creepy how in sync with each other they are, but they are represented as a kind of a texture of kind of the tops of people's heads and faces on this plane that is like waving around. And so I'd love to get, you know, if you can kind of think of crowd emotions, or if you're trying to arrange some sort of a choreographed movement, thinking of it like a wave or something with very liquid physics.
That's interesting. I wonder if, like, if this is taking place in, you know, I keep returning to the idea of a sports stadium. It doesn't have to be a sports stadium, but I'm thinking of the things that stadium and concert venues have at their disposal to affect crowd mood, right? Like, you have people that are coming in, like, selling hot dogs. Like, maybe that does something for the crowd. Or you have, you know, those crazy fans that are just, like, painted all over their body, and they can do things to different parts of the crowd. But, like, how to, you're kind of talking about visualizing it almost as though it's a heat map of sorts.
Yeah, sort of. So let's try out some different things and see what sticks. So maybe everyone at the beginning is kind of like a neutral color. And then as each player clicks, maybe they have to wait like an increasing amount of time for recharges in between clicks. Maybe as each player clicks, you kind of see like a wave of color like radiate from that area and kind of, you know, once it reaches another area that another player's color is spreading from, then you start to get, you know, a little bit more kind of turbulence in that area of a crowd. So, you know, in different scenarios, in a sporting event or in a concert arena or different types of areas where you would see crowds, these can kind of like correspond to different, different emotions, different things that are happening. But I would be interested in seeing the ways that crowd behavior can map onto like a kind of physics driven system.
This kind of a little bit reminds me of a pitch from a couple months ago where I was talking about sort of navigating an army or getting an army from in between battles from one place to another. And, you know, what are characteristics of different sorts of emotions in crowds? You feel like, I mean, it's obvious that the discontent and, you know, people upset can get into fighting, and then that can cause sort of disorder. But maybe there's also the idea of like comedy or the idea of celebrity and like using that to group people together. I just got out of a comedy show last night and the comedian sort of came out into the front of the theater, and then there was just this giant group of people, and I was like, why is there this huge group of people? Well, turns out at the core of them, it was the comedian who had just done the show. So, you know, you could use things like key individuals or, you know, celebrity, I think, is like an interesting concept to introduce into this.
Yeah, so you can kind of draw the crowd in certain directions, either towards points of interest or away from things that, you know, is going to upset them. The only thing that I really don't like about this idea overall is that, like, I feel like in crowds there's a natural propensity towards chaos and disorder, which feels like if you started messing with a crowd too much, that's eventually the way it would turn by nature. And so, you know, that, like, one, that's kind of not interesting because that gives whatever player is playing as that emotion a huge advantage, but also it just seems a little grim and mean-spirited, I'd say.
I wonder if there's something to having a goal, like, preset in this. Like, we actually have to get the crowd to do a thing. So maybe in one, it's orchestrating a wave, which is about getting emotions to cascade predictably across the crowd. And then another time, you're trying to get a crowd to all sort of file into a venue in an orderly fashion. But to do that, you have to do things like pull their attention with snack stands and stuff, or else you're going to get a lot of congestion, and you're more measured on the flow of the throughput of the crowd and how many people, quote, don't feel like they're waiting in line. You get very sort of theme parky in some of this.
I'd love if you have very kind of esoteric directions to follow. Like, maybe at a sports arena, you're trying to keep your opponent's team from winning. So to do that, you have to get all of the elderly people in the arena on their side of the field so that like the batteries and their hearing aids interfere with like the communication tools that the coach is using to try to like give orders to the members of the team. I don't know.
That's interesting, because then you could, if you did like a sort of a SimCity like thing where in great versions of SimCity, you can kind of click on an individual and they'll be like, this is Tom and so, and Tom likes this, that, and this, and he works here. I like the idea of maybe not doing that, but saying like the properties of the person that you selected and, oh, you know, elderly, you know, needs a hearing aid. And then you're looking for like, we need people over here that will disrupt that signal. So you can almost write very sort of almost Nintendo sort of context clues as to what to do next.
And there could be ways to clear out sections, like if you were to drop a stink bomb or something like that, or yeah, like you say, you can walk out a celebrity and that would draw a certain portion of the crowd away from something. Maybe you're trying to, maybe at one point you're tasked with managing the flow of people at like a Comic-Con convention, or maybe you're trying to get people over to your car at a used car lot or something like that. But I just, you know, all these different types of scenarios. Just love to keep throwing them at the player.
I mean, I like that idea. And then you start to learn about the properties of the crowd and you're like, okay, then you can use some basic tools that you know. Oh, these draw elderly people. This draws families. This draws that and this. And you're almost setting the stage, and maybe there's like a little time bar. So you make the whole thing feel a little bit more like a mini Metro level or something, instead of sort of a total war giant mob simulation.
Well, anyways, that's all the time we have on that one. Let's give it a name. Of course, Crowd Control is a great name, but that is the one that inspired this, so we can't just take their name. So let's think of something else.
I mean, if it was a sporting theme in any way, you always have like the 13th man in football is what they're referred to. 12th man? 12th man? Yeah, that might,
I think it's like a Seattle thing. I don't know.
Yeah, the 12th man on the field is the crowd or whatever.
Okay.
There's probably something better than that, though. Plus, I feel like have we named something Crowd Control before?
We might have.
Maybe the name of the game is Sense of Direction or something like
that.
Sense
of Direction?
Like, you're giving these people a sense of direction.
Okay. Because you're kind of like directing. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
That's the warmest endorsement you've ever had.
All right, let's go with that. That is a sense of direction, and let's kick it over to you. What are you bringing today?
Well, I think that this runs the risk of sounding very boring, but I'm hoping we can make it weirder. So I'm thinking of asymmetrical type of multiplayer game, but the asymmetry comes in teams of two, each divided into two groups. And we'll say that this is potentially a first-person shooter. It's going to be a shooter of some sort. One part of your team is out there using just one type of gun. There's only one gun that everybody gets. As you are battling in this arena, you can kind of come back and visit the second part of your group, whose job it is to take and modify your weapons. So you have sort of gun designers and gun users. Essentially, in real time, you have to figure out how to communicate what changes need to be made to your gun in order to help your team get a leg up. So maybe you're like, they're coming at us from up close. If we had some range or something that would change this to a ranged weapon, we're going to get a little bit more of an advantage there. And then sort of a battle plays out as the one gun that each team member has can be custom tailor fit to their playstyle or to what the strategy calls for in the moment.
Interesting. Starting the clock. My mind immediately goes to kind of playing GoldenEye in multiplayer and it's winding kind of labyrinthine maps where you go a long time without seeing anybody. If you're playing with a small number of people, you know, when you see somebody, you just start blasting away because, you know, you're trying to defeat them before they defeat you. What if there's one player who's kind of like the James Bond on each team and another player who's like a rolling robot 3D printer type thing? And as the Bond character goes throughout the world, he can pick up weapons and then basically like put them in his other teammate to modify. And at that point, when a weapon is being modified, then the machine starts making a lot of noise and it becomes easier to find in these kind of winding labyrinthine levels. The other player at that point can either seek out the human character because he knows that he's going to be maybe under-equipped because the gun that he's wanting to upgrade is currently in the shop, as it were. Or he can seek out the 3D printer on wheels type thing that is pretty much defenseless if the player character doesn't have another gun and is kind of perched and ready to pick it up. So, you know, you've got these different players, different objectives. Should they be in proximity to one another? Is that just what the enemy is going to be expecting? Are you drawing your valuable teammate into a trap, or are you going to be there to protect them? You know, I like these kind of mixed alliances.
That's interesting. So kind of the three player teams and then three roles per team. So you have the true like shopkeeper who has maybe access to do things in a more fundamental way. You have the 3D printer, almost the jack robot, if you're using a Gears of War analogy, and kind of follow you around. Maybe has some basic defensive sort of things that it can do, and maybe it can also do things like I really love the idea of either you give this to the 3D printing character or adding a fourth role, which is potentially a materials gatherer. Mm-hmm. And you could do things like as guns shoot and use ammo, you can go and like pick up shells that are on the floor to go and craft new ammo. So like essentially the 3D printer character can be a gathering tool as well as a sort of in the moment defensive tool. Mm-hmm. Finally, almost the Dota like courier to, so like the shopkeeper can give something to 3D robot, say, hey, go 3D robot. Hey, robot, go bring this to the player, because the shopkeeper is very stationary. But of course, that can be, you know, quickened by the James Bond character going back to see Q.
What is the role of the shopkeeper? You know, I guess I was thinking was like if this rolling robot, another kind of point of inspiration is Vanquish, where if you pick up ammo for your gun, obviously that refills your ammo, unless the gun has full ammo, in which case it like knocks that gun up a rank. And so if you want to upgrade a particular gun, then you have to use your other guns to make sure that that one always has full ammo. You know, I was just thinking like just the longer that any gun that you find on the ground is inside of your little robot friend, the stronger and stronger it's going to get until eventually you're kind of rolling around with these really powerful guns. So I'm curious, like just to try to like simplify, like what is the role of the shopkeeper in this whole situation?
Yeah. So in my mind, like I know we talked about the courier robot, the in-between one, we'll refer to them as the robot Q and James Bond. So the role of James Bond, obviously, to be the best hunter killer that's available and be able to call shots of strategy to the other two. Courier can pick up materials potentially for upgrading, has some basic defensive things, maybe traps or something it can lay for James Bond. Maybe can do some basic ammo dropping or something like that. But the real thing that you want, right? Because the shopkeeper, I see the issue of like, is being the shopkeeper just waiting and always kind of being bored? But I think the shopkeeper is playing a game more of, I need a shotgun. And so the robot's going and getting the materials to make the shotgun, whether from the environment or from player drops or that sort of thing. The shopkeeper has to spend time of like, I don't know if it's a mini game or what, but like crafting the weapon itself. And the shopkeeper is responsible for upgrading. So instead of just like it auto upgrades by picking up ammo, you do a, okay, it has to, I need this thing more. It seems like the other team has ranked up their gun. And so now I need my gun ranked up. Potentially if I've survived long enough through them ranking up, I can rank up like twice and get past them or that sort of thing. And if the amount of material scales per trip or something like that. So the crafter and upgrader, the courier and the sort of trap keeper, and then of course the sort of traditional FPS player.
I think there's one thing that's appealing to me about just finding at least base level guns on the ground instead of having to purchase them from somewhere is that they would be rare enough to where they'd be like, you could be reasonably sure early enough in the match that you, if you stumble upon the other player, he's probably not going to have anything. And
yeah,
I think just that, that kind of mind game of seeing somebody and thinking like, does he have a gun? Does he not? Like that's an interesting, it's kind of an interesting gambit there. And whether you're going to take that risk, maybe you can kind of go in slapper style, like in GoldenEye, but, yeah, you know, whether, you know, maybe a player could choose to hang on to the level one gun, knowing that his opponent is going to have the only gun that he's likely to find at this point in the shop to get upgraded. So, you know, I would love for players to not know whether or not the other one has any meaningful defenses.
I think like a good case has been made that the shopkeeper maybe doesn't need to exist, and the secondary robot character can be the shopkeeper plus the courier, you know, just whatever is doing this sort of second type of strategy thing. I also like the idea of having that when you play PUBG or Apex Legends or something, you get a scenario where some people want to run in. They want to go in hot. They want to just pick up the first gun and start killing people immediately. Mm-hmm. And then you have the other people, I fall into Camp B, who are very interested in like, no, I've got to go find like the coolest, best stuff before I feel prepared to go and take on other players. Of course, it never ends up helping me. What if the robot is kind of playing the hunter-gatherer role of the James Bond character, can't even necessarily pick up anything other than just like very simple stuff and has to be handed a weapon or handed equipment, or the, you know, their suit is like actually affixed to them by the robot that sort of is going out getting stuff and like returning to the player. So it's two player teams and they're constantly talking to each other. Like I need a helmet, man. I'm looking for one.
Yeah. Maybe you could have a gun mounted on the back of the robot. So then that way the robot would have actual meaningful defenses. But again, that gun isn't being upgraded. That gun isn't in the hands of the more capable player. So, you know, all of these little risk rewards that you go through as you try to come up with like the best way to, collaboratively protect your team and your resources.
Yeah, you could even give the robot something like just a shock-based weapon or an electricity-based weapon that's like more capable of disabling the other team's robot temporarily than it is actually. Like all you could do is just slightly stun the enemy player.
Well, let's close that down. Let's come up with a name.
Oh, man. Okay, well, it's kind of transformed a little bit, but what do you think of hunter-gatherer?
I was thinking the same thing, actually. I think that that fits pretty well.
All right. Well, sometimes they come easy.
Yep. Yep. Good one. Let's go over now to our community. This one comes from Nathan Cross, who emailed us, said that I heard you were running low on listener submissions, so I figured I'd send you one. Really love your podcast. It was a great idea to start with, and you've turned it into a great show. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Here's my idea. An existentialist fatherhood simulator. Take a game where the goal is to raise your children, but to give it the gritty, brutal challenge and starkness of a game like Papers, Please or XCOM. Maybe it's a roll the dice and usually lose kind of roguelike. Maybe it's scripted like Papers, Please, but the goal is to raise your children, and no matter what you do, you wind up with lose-lose choices, bad RNG, and somebody is going to die or wind up miserable. See what you can do with that. Whew. All right, excellent. Let's start the clock.
Well, oh man, this could get dark.
I think we both have kind of a natural propensity towards taking ideas in a sillier direction, so this might be interesting.
Yeah, I do like the idea of the existentialist fatherhood simulator, but like the random assortment of things you're given are, when you're talking about Papers, Please or XCOM, maybe you kind of get like a, what are some of the factors that we know greatly affect sort of how difficult or easy one's life is going to be. There's always like this, I know now we're getting into slightly darker stuff, but like there's being diagnosed with something, and it doesn't necessarily have to be super sad. It could be a little bit more rogue legacy and, you know, somebody's colorblind and you have to play the whole game in black and white or something like that. Yeah, maybe there's like random properties about your life that you're trying to like play your parenthood through each time.
there's an idea that a lot of people kind of put forward that, you know, I'm not necessarily making the world a better place for myself, but for my children's children. And so that would be interesting to kind of have generations of people growing up, but really like see the persistent changes made on the world. So in a roguelite kind of way, you know, you're usually leveling up your character and carrying over some of the advantages that you picked up in previous runs. But maybe in this case, the only thing that you can do is really invest on the environment around you. When you get to the point where your character dies off or whatever it is, then you pick up the game with a new character, a new father, who's what you chose to do in your last life, your last run, will drastically affect what you are able to do this time around.
What's interesting, this kind of reminds me of, if you're going to go very simplistic with it, it reminds me of her, you know, Reigns.
Yeah. Yeah,
or Reign, right. Rather. Her Majesty, His Majesty. Like, when you're a parent, yeah, speaking of experience, let me speak as the expert on parenting, since I've never been one. You know, life is just a series of decisions, and those decisions include very sort of practical things like, are you going to take job A, B, or C? Are you going to live in city A, B, or C? And then there's those sort of soft decisions that you don't necessarily perceive as having an effect on a future generation, of like, you're going to choose to recycle, or you're going to choose to save money or buy nice stuff. Like, maybe you buy nice stuff and you end up with a child that has all these sort of experiences with things. And so therefore they become a certain type of person. Or then maybe you choose to save and be very conservative, and that can narrow the scope of what your child wants to accomplish. But so they may be a little bit more of a boring person, but they're more financially stable or something like that.
And of course, if you're coming up kind of hard off with money anyways, it would be interesting if you had to choose between investing in your child and investing in, you know, building up, let's say, like a recreational center in your area. And that way, you know, more kind of long-term plan, maybe that gives people a chance to exercise and improves the health of the people in that area. Or maybe it gives, you know, children something to do after school so they don't join gangs or whatever it is. And then, you know, that improves things in the long term, but you're risking not having enough to raise the family that you have right in front of you.
Then you could do sort of moments in the game where you get double duty, right? Like, one generation can choose to have multiple kids, and then you're making, now all the income is split and it's divided, and you're trying to resource manage against that sort of stuff. So you kind of keep building layers of complexity with having different kids and the things that involve having kids. And then also you're trying to trade off and have make yourself a complete person. I think that's like one of the, what I imagine to be one of the hardest things about being a parent, is like, you need to be a stable, loving person, and therefore also, you know, in kind of a healthy state yourself, whether physically or mentally, in order to care for the child.
I wonder if you kind of got the entire breadth of a family tree, that you start with just one member at the top, two members, I guess, but when you have kids, then you can choose, you know, whether you just raising one child is difficult enough, but if you choose to have two or three children, then the next run you would have three perspective characters, and you can kind of switch between them, but you have to split your attention and kind of live the lives of all three of them and make good choices for all three of them. And, you know, it's a lot more to digest, but you could potentially have a lot more impact working together and having three sources of income and having three, you know, this and that, and how difficult that would be, but also, you know, how rewarding. But at the same time, in the moment, when you decide to have more than one child, like, you are risking not being able to afford, and the entire family starves or something like that, you know, like you're risking more. Because it is expensive.
I think one of the things that's really interesting when you think about that in the long term is, let's say that there, you know, the runs, the interface, the whatever this is, the level for level actually is laid out like a family tree, and you're, you know, sort of clicking into these portraits and playing them into each other, and as you play these people's lives, you're affecting who they get married to, and you're watching. You can always scroll through the history of the family tree. You're building that genealogy, and you're seeing things like family accomplishments. You eventually, after, you know, playing through a few people, there might be the family business, right? And then you're faced with challenges down the line of like, am I going to enter into the family business or not? And what are the repercussions of that? Do you maintain relationships with the parents and that sort of thing? So now you get into like, as you get further and further into the game, now you're faced with whether or not to accept and participate in the legacy of the things your family has done before.
And then the lasting effects, positive and negative, of people who, probably mostly negative, of people who maybe fell from public favor even generations ago, people who were criminals or people who lost their fortune. So, you know, it makes managing your people important, not just in the moment, but also generations on.
It would be so interesting. And then, like, you're making decisions about who you're going to marry. You go from being the patriarch to the matriarch of your family, like all that sort of thing. And you develop the parent, right, of any given character that you're playing as. You kind of know when you're doing something that would be dishonest to a decision that you made before. And as your whims change, you literally are embodying those whims and the family choices.
So I wonder how much freedom we choose to give players, because I got the sense, I was watching The Godfather again the other day. You get the sense in that movie that Vito kind of built up this crime empire because he came from a place of poverty himself and he wanted something better for his children. And he always, he would say to Michael that, you know, I wanted it to be a point where you can go into a kind of semi-legitimate role, like a politician or something comfortable. And you could be holding the strings at that point and you wouldn't have to, you know, get your hands dirty with this family business anymore.
Yeah.
And, you know, so whether or not organized crime becomes a part of this,
sure.
It feels like a lot of systems to build on a game.
Well, I think one thing that is real, right, and is maybe one of the driving things throughout it is just straight up like how well-to-do the family is at any given point. And if you make choices that maybe are the right thing for something three generations down the line, but are going to hurt you in the short term, or, you know, you'll have generations where you're like, what we need is like more members of the family. We need a bigger family because that unlocks the ability for people to help you when you're in need or take care of the parents so that they don't become a financial burden for the next, or that burden is also divided amongst the children. So you have like not necessarily the running income. I don't know if that's the right word, but the running wealth of the family. And you'll find that you'll have rebuilding generations where you're not doing too well, but you're building towards the future. And then you'll have generations of prosperity where maybe you get some entitled brats who are making some terrible decisions that are going to learn to move through those ebbs and flows. And as you like scribe this family's history, and you keep playing as many generations as you want. And of course, the number of systems eventually caps out of like, okay, there's only so many things you can do between siblings and life choices and all that sort of stuff.
Right. Let's close that down and let's come up with a name for that one as well.
Oh man.
Family business, I think we've said a number of times, kind of has a pleasant ring to it.
I like it. I think it's pithy.
That was easy enough. Family business. Thank you again to Nathan Cross for submitting that one. And if you would like to submit a video game idea of your own, you can do that, just like Nathan did, by emailing us, playwrightcast@gmail.com. Or you can go to our website, playwrightcast.com/pitch, or you can tweet us at playwrightcast.
Special thank you to Protodome for the use of our theme song, Hello World, off the album Blue Noise. And special thank you to the Kane and Rinse Podcast Network. I don't know why I'm talking about them like they're this big foreign entity. Go to caneandrinse.com and listen to the rest of the shows. They're so good. Didn't McKeel was just doing a YouTube stream recently, wasn't he?
Yeah, for Donkey Kong Country 3 in anticipation of one of the upcoming shows.
Oh my God. I don't envy having to study and finish all those games the way that they always have to do to make grade on the Kane and Rinse Review podcast.
Nothing wrong with Donkey Kong, of course, is some of my favorite Super Nintendo games. But yeah, I mean, if you're trying to be really thorough, those games do get very difficult towards the end.
At least you get the soundtrack. That makes it easier, doesn't it?
Mm. At least for the first two, it does. Anyways, thank you everyone for joining us today. Let's go out with a miniature pitch. What I want to pitch is a game like Waterworld, where you're building up your own societies, but set in space, using just space debris and space junk.
Oh man, that has to be a full game pitch.
I know, we might bring that back. Those are always on the table.
It's true.
All right, we'll see you next week.
Bye.